Hare Krishna. Are any of you here for the first time? If you are, raise your hand. And you're on this side. The format of this program is that we are going through the Bhagavad Gita as it is. This book is called the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad refers to Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Gita means song. When the Lord speaks, He doesn't speak in ordinary language like ordinary people, but whatever He speaks is music and poetry, song. And as it is the translators and commentators' addition to highlight the fact that He is presenting the Bhagavad Gita as it is, as Krishna spoke it, and as Arjuna understood it, without any compromise, without any personally motivated interpretation, but as it is. So in our study here, we have come to the third chapter called Karma Yoga. We've actually come to the 11th verse. How many of you were here for the last week's session? Or how many of you were not here for the last week's session? Okay, quite a few. So I'll read text 10 because it contains a lot of very important information that will be relevant for our study of the Bhagavad Gita and for our lives. So please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So we read from Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text 10. I'll read the Sanskrit shloka twice, and then we will together recite the synonyms and translation. Sahayagya Paja Shrisva Purovacha Pajapati Anena Kashyapisyadvam Eshayos Vishtakamadu Sahayagya Paja Shrisva Purovacha Pajapati Anena Kavavishyadvam Eshavos Vishtakamadu. Please repeat. Saha.
Saha.
Along with.
Along with.
Yagya.
Yagya.
Sacrifices.
Sacrifices.
Praja.
Praja.
Generations.
Generations.
Shrisva.
Shrisva.
Creating.
Creating.
Pura.
Pura.
Anciently.
Anciently.
Uvacha.
Uvacha.
Said.
Said.
Prajapati.
Prajapati.
The Lord of Creatures.
The Lord of Creatures.
Anena.
Anena.
By this.
By this.
Kasavishyadvam.
Kasavishyadvam.
Be more and more prosperous.
Be more and more prosperous.
Esha.
Esha.
This.
This.
Va.
Va.
Your.
Your.
Astu.
Astu.
Let it be.
Let it be.
Ishta.
Ishta.
Of all desirable things.
Of all desirable things.
Kamaduk. Bestower. Translation. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." Please repeat. In the beginning of creation,
the beginning of creation,
the Lord of all creatures,
the Lord of all creatures,
sent forth generations,
sent forth generations,
of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu. For Vishnu.
And blessed them
by saying,
"Be thou happy
by this yajna
sacrifice.
Because its performance,
because its performance
will bestow upon you,
will bestow upon you
everything desirable,
everything desirable
for living happily,
for living happily
and achieving liberation." Report by Srila Prabhupada. The material creation by the Lord of creatures, Vishnu, is a chance offered to the conditioned souls to come back home, back to Godhead. All living entities within the material creation are conditioned by material nature because of their forgetfulness of their relationship to Vishnu or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are to help us understand this eternal relation. As it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, "Vaidais chasayavair aham eva vedya." The Lord says that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Him. In the Vedic hymns, it is said, Satyam Vishvasyatmeshwaram. Therefore, the Lord of the living entities is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, 2.4.20, Srila Shukadeva Goswami describes the Lord as Pati in so many ways. Shriya Patir Yadya Pati Prajapatir Diyam Patir Lokapatir Darapati Patir Gatis Chandaka Vrishni Satpatam Prasidatam Me Bhagavan Satam Pati. The Prajapati is Lord Vishnu, and he is the Lord of all living creatures, all worlds, and all beauties, and the protector of everyone. The Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajna, sacrifices, for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in the material world, they can live very comfortably without anxiety. And after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. That is the whole program for the conditioned soul. By performance of yajna, the conditioned souls gradually become Krishna conscious and become godly in all respects. In the age of Kali, the Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of the names of God, is recommended by the Vedic scriptures. And this transcendental system was introduced by Lord Chaitanya for the deliverance of all men in this age. Sankirtan Yajna and Krishna consciousness go well together. Lord Krishna, in his devotional form as Lord Chaitanya, is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32 as follows, with special reference to the Sankirtan Yajna. Krishna Varnam Tusa Krishnam Sangopangas Kaparshadam Yajyai Sankirtana Prayayar Yajantihi Sumedasa. In this age of Kali, people who are endowed with sufficient intelligence will worship the Lord, who is accompanied by his associates, by performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Other yajnas prescribed in the Vedic literatures are not easy to perform in this age of Kali. But the Sankirtan Yajna is easy and sublime for all purposes, as recommended in Bhagavad Gita also, 9.14. Translation again. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and bless them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice. because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. Hare Krishna. So, we're going to make this class a little interactive to make sure that you are alert. So I will begin, and this is not an open book or an open smartphone exam. So let us try to recall what the verse says. There are many points, important points in the verse. So who can think of one point? Yes. 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 Very good. Yes. Yes. That's true. That's true. Yeah. Yes. 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 Yes, correct. Yes, very important. Yes, yes, very important. By performance of yoga, one can live happily and achieve liberation. Yes. Can you repeat it? Yes. Good. Yes. Yes. Correct. Well, we have a very wise assembly of sages here. So, yes, this verse, and the Bhagavad Gita in general, but this verse in particular, explains the purpose of the material creation and how we are meant to live in the Lord's creation. It's like any machine or product will come with a set of instructions. So the material world comes with a set of instructions, and the instructions are given in the Bhagavad Gita. And this verse is a summary of the instructions. So the earlier chapters describe, and this is essential, and so I'll mention it just to be sure. But the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita is that the living entity is distinct from the material body. And this is the most fundamental principle that we must understand. that we are not the body, but we are the soul, the jiva, or the atma within the body. And nahamyate hamyamane sarire, when the body is killed, the soul does not die. The soul is eternal. It has no beginning and no end. And this understanding alone is enough to revolutionize our whole life. Because everyone wants his self-interest. That's natural. But to know our self-interest, we must know who is our actual self. Most people are in ignorance as to their actual identity. And unless they identify with the body or the mind or the intelligence or the ego, and they act for the benefit of the body. And this causes them great distress. They're trying to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy. But they're trying in the wrong way. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if you're doing a mathematical calculation and you make a mistake in the first step, then even if you perform all the other steps properly, you may get further and further away from the actual solution, because you made a mistake in the first step. So, if we think we're the body, that's a mistake from the very beginning. And then, even if we do everything perfectly for the sake of the body, we will end up further away from the happiness that we are trying to attain. And this is very practical. In fact, the verse mentions different generations, even in recent generations in the United States. Many of the families who immigrated, maybe two or three generations ago, they really had to struggle to, establish themselves in this country and, create a good future for their sons and daughters and grandchildren. But then, the subsequent generations, they had it pretty good, and many of them did exactly what they were told would make them happy, based on the Bhagavad concept of love. And they got good educations, they had good sources of income, they had, a qualified wife, qualified husband, beautiful and intelligent children, and went on good holidays, and they did everything that they were told would make them happy. But in the end, they weren't happy. And this gave rise to a whole new field of study in psychology and other related sciences, the study of happiness, what makes people happy. Because all the things that people were told would make them happy, which they executed faithfully, didn't make them happy. So what does make them happy? And so the research has shown that once a person achieves a certain basic standard of living, in other words, you know, has a roof over his head and has two square meals, whatever, then getting more doesn't actually make them more happy. And yet people are driven by the idea of getting more. There was an American entrepreneur named John Paul Getty, who was the richest man in the world at the time, not so long ago. And one reporter asked him, what is, you know, you're the richest man in the world, you have everything that money can buy. Can you tell us your philosophy of life in one word? He said, yes, I can. More. That was his philosophy of life. More. But it's such an illusion because, like I said, like Prabhupada said, you know, no matter how many lakhs or crores you have in the bank or millions or billions, you can still only eat, you know, the same two or three chapatis. You can't do anything more. So that, you know, that it doesn't make you more happy. They also asked him, John Paul Getty, that, you know, the same way you're the richest man in the world, you have everything that money could buy. So when you are alone, and no one is with you, and you have nothing else to do, what do you think about? And he replied, I think about how to pay the bills. Just like anyone else. Because he wants more. So for him, paying the bills might be, you know, he has to organize, you know, so many billion dollars to take over some company or something. But he wants more, so he needs money, more money to get more. And so was the richest man in the world, but he's still, like anyone else, thinking how to pay the bills. So this is, it's like what the Bhagavatam says, that the small animals eulogize the big animals. That anyone who is not God conscious is like an animal. Anyone who identifies with the body is like an animal. And so, you know, the little animals are praising the big animals. But they're the same. The little guy's thinking of how to pay his bill to whatever, you know, get a new car. And the richest man in the world is thinking of how to pay his bill, you know, to close some multi-million or billion-dollar deal. But none of them are happy. That is the point. Rich or poor, maybe it doesn't matter. As Srila Prabhupada said when he first came to India, that in India people are poverty-stricken, and in America people are affluence-stricken, but everyone is stricken without Krishna consciousness. So, Yes, how to become happy, and these studies have shown that things like meditation and actually serving others, things that are actually quite consistent with Krishna consciousness, those can elevate your level of happiness. They can. But these studies have also shown something else, which is that different people have a baseline of happiness. And no matter what they do, they don't get much higher or go much lower than their baseline, which it's sort of a verification of the law of karma, that you are allotted a certain amount of happiness according to your karma, and no matter how you try to increase your happiness or decrease your distress, you can't do it because you have a certain destiny. Srila Prabhupada used to quote a saying that even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you. Now, in the old days, Calcutta was the richest city in India, so people thought if I go to Calcutta, I'll make my fortune. I'll have my new life, I'll make my fortune. But some people think about America now. So the saying was, even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you. Because the idea is that your fate or your destiny is written on your forehead. And that's why when people are like lamenting their bad luck, they'll go like this. Oh, I was one digit off of winning the lottery. Oh my, such bad luck. So even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you. Your destiny will go with you. And you can't really change that. And even this research done by psychologists and sociologists on this topic of happiness, they find that people tend to have a baseline of happiness. And that's, no matter what they do, they always sort of come back to that baseline. And Srimad Bhagavatam, both in the first canto, Narada Muni, and in the seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj, they both say the same thing. And that is that everyone has a certain amount of happiness and distress which is destined to them. Now, this is very easy to understand because nobody wants unhappiness. Nobody goes to the temple or the church or any house of worship and prays for misery. Do any of you go to the temple and pray for misery? Do you come here in the hopes that you'll become more miserable? No. So Srimad Bhagavatam says that nobody tries to get misery, but misery comes on its own accord. So the Bhagavatam says that just as misery comes of its own accord, happiness will also come. Will both come of their own accord. And so the effort to increase your happiness and decrease your misery is futile. It's a waste of time. And so the Bhagavatam says that instead of trying futilely to increase your material happiness and decrease your material distress, you should use that energy and that intelligence and your resources to become Krishna conscious. And that will really make you happy. It's a totally different platform of happiness. I first met Srila Prabhupada in Boston, and I was very fascinated how he would answer people's questions. This is in like March and April of 1969. And so one man sort of challenged him that, are you happy? And Srila Prabhupada replied that when I was in India, I had 5 children, and there were always so many problems. And now that I've come to America, I have 500 children. And I love them, and they love me, and we have no problems. So then that man said, but that's material. He thought it was material. And Srila Prabhupada said, I have many other platforms of happiness, but I am trying to explain on a level that you can understand. But even from that point of view, and that's the principle, that one who gives to Krishna is not the loser, but he is the gainer by so many times. Now, there are many examples concerning Srila Prabhupada. He used to cite the example of Jawaharlal Nehru. He went to England, and as a matter of prestige, he hired a British servant, which was very costly. And Srila Prabhupada said, and that was like one servant. And Srila Prabhupada said he had like hundreds of American and British and servants, and he doesn't have to pay them. In fact, to the contrary, they pay him for the opportunity to serve him. So these are examples of how the one who gives to Krishna is not the loser, but the gainer. And we shouldn't be afraid of giving to Krishna or sacrificing for Krishna, but we should welcome the opportunity. We should want to do more and more and more as quickly as possible. When it might sound naive, but when I first came to the Boston Temple, within the first 3 visits, maybe the second or third visit, so there was one other new person who was also coming. So he came up to me, like in this very, inspired mood, and said, everything that we have is stolen property. It all belongs to God. And then he took out his wallet and said, this is stolen property. And, the sooner we give this back, the better it is. So we should have that sense of, urgency and that faith that by giving to Krishna one is not the loser, but is the gainer. Now, I'm not sure I'm reading everyone's expressions correctly, but I sense there may be some ambivalence or some little doubt about what I'm saying, about how practical this is. And it is practical, but one develops that faith by association. And, therefore association is so important. And not only associating with, sannyasis who are speaking, but even by associating with grihasthas who have had similar experiences of, gaining by sacrifice. And that's what the verse says, that by performing sacrifice for Vishnu, one will be happy and will live happily in this world without anxiety, and one will get liberation in the end, go back home, back to Godhead. So there's one devotee in Bombay. His name, when I was initiated, his name was Srinath Kidas. Before initiation, he was known as Dr. Narendra Desai. He had a PhD doctor, not medical doctor. And his father, Didi Desai, was a very shrewd businessman. He was also a member of parliament. And he built up, quite an industrial empire. And he went to, Singapore and Malaysia, on business. And quite suddenly he had a heart attack and died. And so Dr. Desai was his only son. And, I used to meet business people to get their support for the Juhu project. And so I'd hear the talk. And the talk was that, that Dr. Desai was a sort of, Pollyanna, I don't know how to explain it. Who can explain Pollyanna? Like a simple, innocent person. And they were doubting that he would be able to maintain the, industrial empire that his father had left. So one morning, I visited Dr. Desai unannounced. Somehow I just came, rang the bell, and he had quite a nicely decorated apartment in Nepomucene Road, and he was, sitting, a warden right at that time. So he was sitting like cross-legged on this sort of fancy furniture, chanting japa very intently with his eyes closed. And so I said, "Wow, I'm quite impressed." And he said, he gets up early every morning and he does his puja, he reads Srimad Bhagavatam, he chants japa. And he said that he actually got like so many inspirations from his business during his morning japa. I don't think it was like trying to, but it came. No, it came like that. And then after a while, he turns out he's actually very intelligent. And Krishna gave him intelligence. So after a while, he started a new line of electricals, light bulbs. And, you know, I was seeing these billboards all over Bombay with this, you know, Sima lights. And there was something about that, the advertising. I didn't know it was his new company, but there was something about it was like very attractive. Somebody just like made me want to buy that product. And then I found out it was his. And I thought, oh, you know, this must be Krishna. Krishna's like, you know, giving him the intelligence. It could even be Krishna in the heart of the potential customers, urging them, you know, to buy, because he really gave a lot. You know, yajna. He really sacrificed a lot for Krishna, but whatever, it's like whatever he gave me, he kept getting more and more. So these are, you know, practical examples. And then as a preacher, you know, I started to, you know, invite people over to his house for dinner, and they'd meet him. And then they'd say, wow, you know, it's like, you know, get up, chant Hare Krishna, read Srila Prabhupada's books, you do some puja, you make crores upon crores of rupees. I think I could try that. I mean, occasionally, but Krishna, that's the thing about Krishna. He'll do what you need. You know, he'll give you what you need according to your situation. But he can give, you know, any amount. And sometimes he does that. If he sees that some devotee will use that nicely in Krishna's service, he can do that. But ultimately, you know, we have to leave it all behind, and that's why this yajna principle is so important, because it enables you to live happily in this world and to achieve liberation. It's like it's such a perfect formula. And it is practical. Srila Prabhupada, you know, sometimes gave his example. Yes, that he said, you know, in the beginning Krishna tested me by taking everything away. Sometimes that happens. You know, Srila Prabhupada was a, you know, quite a successful businessman in India. But then at a certain stage, things started to go wrong. And he thought of a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord Krishna directly. Yasyaham anugrinami harishe tadramanishini. Does anyone know this verse? Yasya ham anugrinami, that when I feel especially mercifully disposed to some devotee, harishye tadanam shana, the first installment of my special mercy is I take everything away from him. Now I can see you're in good hands here, because no one has taught you that verse. If they had taught you, you might have run away. But I think now we're like ready for the next stage. And then what happens is that his family members start to disrespect him. You know, the people who thought loved him, it turns out really they liked him because he was doing well financially, but when they see he's suffering financially, they're not so interested. So, according to this verse, he suffers doubly. He suffers first because he lost his wealth, and second because his so-called friends and family members are disrespecting him, neglecting him. Now, so when does Krishna do this? Why does he do it? When does he do it? He does it if he feels that a devotee is sincere but is being held back by some material attachment. And when Srila Prabhupada when Srila Prabhupada's business was going bad, he thought of this verse, and he actually presented it to one of his god brothers, that maybe this is what's happening to me, maybe Krishna's doing this. So, and then, you know, he took Vanaprastha ashram and sannyas and crossed the ocean 50 years ago, then ISKCON, and then the other side, you know, like I said, at first Krishna tested me by taking away everything, then Krishna tested me by giving me everything. And then it was like, you know, I had 5 children out of 500 children. So, that these are like practical experiences. You know, Prabhupada experienced this, and by his experience, you know, his faith in these scriptural statements was, you know, solidified. You know, he was preaching to us based on his faith, based on his realization, based on his experience. I'll give a little story just to on this point. So Srila Prabhupada had this is like in the early days when Srila Prabhupada first went back to India. So there was a young man who was translating his books into Hindi. I think his name was Rajiv Gupta. And you know, Prabhupada knew the father also. So after the first big Delhi pandal at the LIC grounds, some days later the boy's father came to meet Srila Prabhupada, and the father had a weakness that he was addicted or attached to smoking cigarettes. So when Srila Prabhupada saw him, you know, they exchanged some words, and then Srila Prabhupada asked him, have you given up smoking? And the man said, he looked down, no, I haven't. And he said, you know, I need some special mercy. I think I need some special mercy. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, special mercy. There is such a thing as special mercy. And then he quoted the verse, Yasyaha Manu Grinami Harishya Sadhanam Shana, that when Krishna wants to give special mercy to someone, he takes everything away from the person. So then Srila Prabhupada asked, do you want that special mercy? He said, "No, Prabhupada. No, I'll do it myself." And but it's true, you know, that if you are able to do something yourself, then you don't need that particular kind of mercy. But it actually is mercy. And by that mercy you become detached. And then when you're detached, Krishna can give you more without, you know, fear that what he gives you will pull you down, but that you'll actually use that in Krishna's service. So, yeah. There are many instances, I won't take much longer, but one example is Bali Maharaj. Do you know the story of Bali Maharaj? That Vamanadeva took everything away from him. And in the discussion in Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, it says that was the Lord himself, that this was like his special favor. But then the Lord gave everything to Bali Maharaj, even gave himself. And so, you know, Srila Prabhupada explains that it's true that when the Lord favors someone, he will take away his material attachments. But then but the real favor is when the person becomes detached, then the Lord gives him everything, and even gives himself. So, well, these are very important topics and deep topics. And, we should consider these points and try to implement them. Make an experiment. Srila Prabhupada, don't have to accept it blindly. Make an experiment. Try it. And see how it works. So are there any questions or comments? Are there any reflections or thoughts? Or yes. Yeah. Oh yes, that's for ordinary people. They have like a baseline, their basic level of happiness, and no matter what happens, they tend to hover around that baseline. But when you engage in devotional service, then you become happier. In fact, it's described in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that pure devotional service has six characteristics. And one is that it brings relief from material distress, and shubhada, it brings all auspiciousness. And in that analysis of shubhada, giving auspiciousness, there are different elements, and one of the elements in auspiciousness is happiness. So those of these six characteristics, those two begin with sadhana bhakti, and then there are two others that come in bhava bhakti, and then there's two others that come in prema bhakti. But even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, you can experience that relief from material distress and increasing happiness. And you should. I mean, if you're doing things correctly, you would. You would experience it. She says that sometimes when she's in a distressful situation, it's hard to focus on Krishna. So what should she do in that situation? Well, you could take prasad in abundant quantity. Well, what do you do? I mean, if I'm not being too inquisitive. Or what works? Let's say, I should just say that. Well, that's good. That should be our response. That is a solution to Shakti Krishna. Another way of taking shelter of Krishna, the holy name, could be kirtan. But that's good. It may be a struggle, but it does work. In a mantra, it delivers the mind. And if you do it, it's like that saying, God helps those who help themselves. And Srila Prabhupada said that in the context of devotional service, to help yourself means to place yourself in the presence of transcendental sound. So if you do that, it may be hard at first, you know, your mind may be too drawn to your problems or your difficulties, but it will eventually work. And so that's good that you do it. Just like take sufficient time, you know. That's good. I'm glad to hear that that's what you do. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Maybe you can help. Yeah. Same about you. Yeah. Yes. That is a very good question. Well, the book which I mentioned, The Nectar of Devotion, which is Srila Prabhupada's summary study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's the complete science of Bhakti Yoga. And Srila Rupa Goswami mentions like 9 stages, you could say, in the development of Bhakti. And it's good to know this progression because you can, you know, place yourself in it and see what lies ahead. So, Ado Shraddha, first is faith. Faith means, faith in the devotional scriptures, maybe, and in the devotees who practice them. So, Ado Shraddha, Tata Sadhu Sangat. And after you have that preliminary faith, then Sadhu Sangha, you associate with devotees, like this gathering. It's Sadhu Sangha, it's a way of associating with devotees. You're going to the temple, on Sunday for a trip. And the more you progress, the more you want to associate with devotees. So, adoshada tata sadhu sangha, tata bhajana kriya. Bhajana kriya means that you actually begin the practice of bhakti yoga. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is the stage at which the candidate will take initiation. You know, bhajana kriya is like chanting mala, following the regulated principles. And then anartha nivritti syat. So when we come to devotional service, we have these things called anarthas. Have you ever heard that word? Yeah. So artha means that which is wanted or desirable, and anartha is the opposite, something that's unwanted. So that means bad habits, bad qualities, you know, like, say, being attached to smoking, that would be an anartha. Or gossiping, so by bhajana kriya, by engaging in devotional service properly, the result will be that these anarthas become destroyed. Not 100% at that state, but say 75%. Then the next stage is nishtha. Nishtha means steadiness. Like if we have anartha, then we're not so steady in our devotional service. Like we engage in devotional service and then suddenly you're whatever, watching a movie or whatever. But after the anarthas are cleared, then you become more steady. Then you branch out into these different unwanted activities. Then comes ruchi. Ruchi means taste. And you have a real taste. And there are like two sort of levels of ruchi, you could say. One type of ruchi is that if the kirtan is performed very melodiously, you have taste. Or if the discourse is given, you know, very nicely, then you have taste. But otherwise, you don't. But then higher stage of ruchi is, as long as it's Krishna's name, you know, even if it's not sung that well in a musical sense, if someone's speaking about Krishna, even if they're not so eloquent or erudite, but they're speaking about Krishna. And then there's asakti, which means attachment. This is like very good at this attachment means attachment to Krishna. So that whole progression is sadhana bhakti. And then from asakti you go to bhava. Bhava is a transcendental position, liberated position. And you, at that stage you begin to have like direct realization of God. You can actually, you know, get a glimpse of Him, and so that's like the liberated path, and that's a totally, in a way, totally different category. In a way it's the same, it's just the same thing, Shraddha becoming more mature, but in a way it's different, because at that stage, you know, Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma, you're beyond the material, mode of nature, and you're really experiencing Krishna. And then, and so that's Surya Amsa, that's considered, you know, a ray of light of Prema Bhakti. And Prema Bhakti is, it's like Bhava Bhakti, but it's more fully developed. That's like the perfection stage of love of God, and then at that stage you're in your direct relationship with Krishna. So, but that happiness, that's like Prabhupada said, like I have many other platforms of happiness. So we have a certain type of happiness just in the beginning. In the very beginning, in sadhana bhakti. But then there are other levels of happiness that are more fully experienced in, as you progress. That was a good question. Yes. That's another good question. She says when she sees devotees who have faith in Guru and Krishna, she's very attracted to that. So how can she develop that faith? Well, Srila Prabhupada said, you know, sangat sanjayate kama, that it develops from association. And by associating with devotees who have more faith than you, faith increases. And by following the instructions, you get the result. You know, if you follow properly, then you should get the result, and then that will also increase your faith, because you've seen it's working. But you also have to be patient. You know, that's also part of the requirements for success in devotional service. Because there may be some delay. You know, it may not come immediately. And as Srila Prabhupada said, that sometimes that, you know, Krishna or Maya is testing the devotee to see how sincere the devotee is. Because if there's some delay, I've been chanting for 6 months, and I'm not feeling ecstasy, maybe I should try something else. So we need to be patient and also confident, because I'm doing my best to follow the regulated principles, Krishna will help. You know, sooner or later, Krishna will help me, and so we just persevere. And enthusiasm is also required. Utsaham is chaya. So, we need both enthusiasm and patience. Srila Prabhupada said if you have that enthusiasm without patience can lead to a desire to control. And patience without enthusiasm can lead to nothing. You know what lethargy is? They're laziness. He's like so patient, but doesn't have any enthusiasm to do it. He's just being patient and just not doing it. And then the other one, I'm enthusiastic and I want this result. I want it fast. I want it now without patience. But then you want to control. You control the situation, control the people around me, and control Krishna. And I want this now. Why aren't you giving it to me now? So we need all of those. It's a hard, mischayat, and confidence confidence of success. That's very, very important to associate with the grasp of it. And whether you just practice, many of us try, of course, self-help is it, but many of the devotees will move, but they have so much confusion. And you just did whatever Prabhupada said, and they were experiencing the results. I never heard it, but that could be a good formula. Especially if, yeah, but I don't think it could be absolute. Because, I mean, we do want to associate with advanced devotees as much as possible. And especially in the beginning, we do that more. Because what association will we give to juniors when we ourselves are? But, so I think that, but it's true, we will do all three. We'll associate with more advanced devotees, we'll associate with peers, we'll associate with less advanced devotees, with more junior devotees. But there is tremendous benefit from associating with peers that isn't there with associating with seniors or juniors. So, we need to do all three. Yeah. Thank you. Yes? My pleasure, my pleasure.
See, I do not understand that you work on this. I feel both the world side, kinds of Krishna consciousness, or kinds of bhakti. So, in relation to devotional service of the Krishna consciousness, how do I understand the term sadhu?
Mm-hmm.
It is like, in different to this material world, you know, how we were raised up. And how we went to our science classes, but now when I see in Krishna consciousness, I think that I try to make a relationship. I don't know what it is.
Okay. Does it bother you that we use the word science?
It's not that it bothers, but I would like to understand that it bothers.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll answer from a couple of perspective. One thing that Srila Prabhupada said about science is that it doesn't change. Like 1 + 1 = 2. Like it doesn't change. It's been that way from the beginning and it will always be that way. So Krishna consciousness is a science in the sense that it doesn't change. You know, what's in the Bhagavad Gita was true in the past, it's true in the present, and it will be true in the future. It can also be accepted according to the scientific method. Like you have a hypothesis and you test it, and you know, you perform an experiment to test it, and then you have to be able to repeat it. So in that sense, it is subject to scientific scrutiny. You make an experiment, okay, then it can't, you know, 16 rounds for 6 months, and then so you make an experiment, and you know that, and you see whether the hypothesis is verified by it, and it can be repeated. You can tell someone else the same thing, and if they do it, they also get the same result. So in that sense, for the spiritual science. Different from material science. Yeah. Yes. I heard this said by a couple in Mumbai named Shivam and Kishori, who, anyway, that's another topic, but they're making the point that when you're with seniors or superiors, you have to be on good behavior. And when you're with juniors, you have to be on good behavior. So, in that process, there may be parts of you that don't get exposed. Whereas with peers, if you have a genuine, you know, loving relationship, a friendship, then you can, you know, like Guhyamakiti Puchiti, you can reveal your mind in confidence and acquire confidentially. And there, you don't have the restrictions to, like, you know, really be on your best behavior like you would with a senior or a junior. That's very nice. That's very good. Yeah, things that followers of Vedic culture have known for thousands of years, millions of years. People are sort of stumbling on it. Yeah. In fact, there's a book called Stumbling on Happiness by a, you know, quite a reputed sociologist or psychologist at Harvard University. And the basic premise of the book, or the title of the book, is that people are very poor at predicting what will make them happy. And you know, really, you just sort of stumble on it. But people, they, stumble on Krishna consciousness. They get a book, or they get some prasad, or they meet, you know, they just stumble on it. They don't know it's going to make them happy. It's the only thing that will really, but they don't know, they just stumble on it. And they get it. Yes. Well, you know, I think if within themselves they know they're not happy, but someone could be like so much in the mode of passion, rajagun, but it will catch up with them. You know, they can try to avoid confronting the fact of their own loneliness, their own isolation, their own emptiness, but it will catch up to them in the form of, you know, say heart disease, or like so many diseases are related to one's emotional state. So they can try to avoid, you know, confronting the reality of what's actually within them. But, you know, it will come back on them, you know, in the form of some disease, for example. And, but that can also be good for them, you know, if it makes them, you know, get more real about their actual situation. A lot of them, you know, it's really the modes of nature, you know, but if there's like some touch of the mode of goodness, then it's easier for them to realize actually, you know, this isn't making me happy, you know, I feel empty, I feel lonely, I feel depressed. And then they'll look beyond accumulating more. Well, yes. She says that the whole society is operating on the principle of more. Everywhere you go, you know, your neighbors, your co-workers, they're all in the same mood of more. And so it's easy to get swept along in that mood. And that's why, you know, sadhu sangha, ado shadha tita sadhu sangha, that's why we have to associate with devotees. And it's very clear that one should also avoid intimate association with non-devotees. In other words, you shouldn't take their advice and, you know, in relation to your lifestyle. You can, yeah, you have to work with them so you may have some social interaction as a formality. But, you know, you can't really disclose your mind in confidence to them, because they won't give you good advice. They'll only give you bad advice. So that this book, I was thinking now, this book is also very important, The Nectar of Instruction, the Vedashamrita. So that what I was quoting, Utsaha Nishchayat Dharyat, enthusiasm, confidence, patience, that's from there. And then this other one, Guryamakiti Pichiti, revealing one's mind and confidence. That's a very important to do with devotees. And Srila Prabhupada quotes his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in the purport, that the other side of it is that one should not disclose one's mind and confidence to non-devotees, because they cannot give any good advice. They will that should be banned in Christ. There should be the careful, there should be discriminating. Well, he does want you to be happy, but you could be attached to something that's not making you happy. Like children, they might get attached to something that's not good for them. But as a parent, you know it's not good for them, so you take it away. So that's an, I mean, it could be anything, it could be. You get the idea. So, the child might not like it, you know. The child might think, oh, you know, mommy's so cruel, she took away my thing. But actually, it's for the child's benefit. So Krishna's like a child, a kind parent, and if we're attached to something that's not good for us, which means something that will not contribute to our ultimate happiness, he might take it away, but it's only, as Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna will take something away from the devotee only to give the devotee something better. So we have to like see that and appreciate it. And again, by associating with devotees who have some realization, they can share their experiences, how they benefited from, you know, Krishna taking away some attachment that was keeping them down. So it is Krishna's kindness and love and favor. Oh, there's a nice prayer we actually read it last night, in which Prithu Maharaj prays to Lord Krishna that as a father does what's best for his son or daughter without being asked. So you just do whatever is best for me without waiting for me to ask. Because I may not even know what's best for me. But you know what's best. You just do whatever is best for me. Good. Good questions. So what is next? We can't hear you. They can't hear you there. You have to come here, stand up. Can you hear me? So, many of us, and myself included, work very hard most of the week trying to maintain a bank balance. I don't know if any of you are in that situation. How many of you have been to Mumbai? A few? So, when you go to Mumbai now, to the temple, Juhu, that temple didn't exist when, at the time that Maharaj was younger, he gave up a bank balance that we're trying to maintain, like a seven-figure bank balance, so he could live in a property in the middle of nowhere where there was no Juhu that you see now. So it exists now largely because of him. So I should have done this in the beginning, my apologies. The point I'm getting to is you've now met him and experienced some of the wisdom and nectar that flows from him. There's much more of that information.
condensed and compressed into these books here. So I just wanted to bring your attention to them, and I wanted to ask Maharaj maybe he could speak about them, because they're wonderful books. I've read them, and you should all own a copy of these, because they'll make your life very rich and sublime. And would you be willing to maybe explain them a little bit so we know what they all are? There's another one coming about you here, but we'll save that for a future visit.
The first book is called Watering the Seed, and it's based on, the title is based on Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Rupa Goswami, where he talks about the Bhakti Mata Beej, the seed of devotional service, and he says that you should water it, you know, by chanting and hearing about Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, like, planted the seed. There's Srila Prabhupada Lamrita. I hope you've all read Srila Prabhupada Lamrita. So in the six volumes, the second volume is called Planting the Seed. So this is like watering the seed that Prabhupada planted. And it contains a lot of my personal exchanges with Srila Prabhupada, and also just different things, you know, perspectives on Srila Prabhupada and things I learned from him. And there's a foreword written by His Holiness Radhanath Swami. And the second book is Many Moons. Now, Many Moons, of course, in colloquial English, it's like many moons means like a long time. Like one moon is like a month. So many. I heard it the other day. So it's been many moons since I saw you. But there's another meaning to many moons here, which is, you know, Srila Prabhupada would quote a Chanakya sloka, Eka Chandra, you know, that one moon will light up the darkness of the night more than thousands of stars. So Srila Prabhupada said, you know, he wasn't interested in like thousands of cheap disciples, but he wanted like one moon. And that was a big question, whether Srila Prabhupada would get that one moon from amongst us. But then, and I mean, one of those moons was Jayananda Prabhu, who's, we think of today on the occasion of New York Rath Yatra. So Srila Prabhupada himself once commented that he was looking for one moon, but now by Krishna's grace, you know, there are many moons. And we took Jayananda Prabhu as an example, because Srila Prabhupada said, you know, we should observe his disappearance day like you do that. So we thought, okay, he's attained a certain status like the moon. So I think a lot of the questions that came up tonight, in a way, could be answered by this book, by the examples of these devotees who, they suffered, you know, reversals, everything like what we experience, but they in the end, achieved very exalted states of consciousness and destinations. So there's like six disciples of Srila Prabhupada. There's nine in this book. There's Jayananda Prabhu, Lord Govinda Swami Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, Sridhar Swami Maharaj, Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, Bhakti Sudhamadhar Swami Maharaj. And then there are three grand disciples. One is named Abhiram Thakur. He actually met the devotees in Pakistan. They used to go to Pakistan. But then it was like so bad for the Hindus there, he was able to immigrate to India. And then he was in Pune. And then after his wife passed away, he moved into the temple at Chaupati. He was like a Vanaprastha. Very sweet man. And then Mother Kirtida, she's a disciple of Kamalakrishna Goswami. And she left her body in Dallas. And then Mother Archivigraha, she was initiated by me. And she left her body in Vrindavan. And she, before she left, she had a desire that other devotees should be able to come to Vrindavan and leave their bodies in the holy dham. That's what she did, with devotees coming and chanting with her and speaking with her. They're quite a phenomenon. But with better medical treatment, because when she left, it was so very poor. I mean, she couldn't even get someone to do a proper IV. That Mother Kirtida was a nurse in Dallas, and she was in Vrindavan. So when she came over and did the IV for Mother Archivigraha, because it was like just such bad, or poor. So then that leads to the next book, Life's Final Exam, Death and Dying from the Vedic Perspective. And that title comes from a verse that basically says that, you know, whatever, you know, sadhana, koro bhajan, whatever sadhana and bhajana you do during your life, it will be tested at the time of death. And that's really like the final exam. So if you pass the exam, then you go back home, back to Godhead. And if you don't, then you come again. But as a devotee, you're given a chance to continue where you left off. But this book has a lot of aspects to it, like philosophical and cultural discussions of death and dying. Then some, you know, the story of the hospice in Vrindavan, Bhaktivedanta Hospice, how that came to be and what work it does. And then, different sort of, you could say, case histories of devotees. I mean, many moons there are, in a way you could say, case histories. But those are pretty much devotees who were steady, you know, in their devotional service throughout their lives. And in Life's Final Exam, there are a number of cases of devotees who weren't steady all along, but still at the end they had very glorious departures. And then there's some stories of devotees taking care of parents. Yes, there is quite fascinating. So there's one about Keshava Bharati Das Goswami. He took care of his mother. She was a Christian. Then she became a devotee. And then there was another couple, Kaushalya and her husband. They took care of his father, who was an atheist. But a really confirmed atheist. But at the end, he became a theist. He didn't become a Hare Krishna devotee, he didn't become a Christian, but he did become a theist. And then many devotees requested, I told the story of taking care of my parents, the two cases, because they also had like quite glorious departures. And Srila Prabhupada said, the parents of my disciples will realize their good fortune at the time of their passing away. So it's really, I mean, sometimes the parents don't like it when their children become devotees, even Hindu parents. But the parents benefit you know, willingly or unwillingly, but still benefit. And that benefit is often seen right at the time of death. And then there are stories of devotees facing death, and it's quite a fascinating book. Like there's one devotee, she's from South Africa, but she worked for Merrill Lynch, so she was in New York in the Merrill Lynch building on 9/11. And the Merrill Lynch building was right across from the World Trade Center, so she saw the whole thing. And, yeah, she describes her experiences and what she saw, like people jumping out of windows and, like, flapping their arms to, like, try to break their fall. So many things. And it was like, but within all of that, she had, like, a very deep spiritual experience, which she shares. And then there's even some by His Holiness Dr. Tirthaswami about his experience in the course of dying. You know. So that's really a very fascinating study. And, you know, life's final exam is something, it's like an exam we all will face. It's not optional. And so it's good to prepare. It's good to prepare. It's good to know how to help other people when they are in that situation. And there's also the subject of grieving, like after you lose a loved one, and there's also like how to deal with that grief, that loss. So it's quite a comprehensive study from the Vedic perspective. So, yeah, I mean, you know, ordinarily one shouldn't speak about oneself. But I don't even really feel that I wrote these books. I mean, I was maybe an instrument, but I do feel that, anyway, I felt I was ordered or deputed or encouraged. Yeah, it's a way we can associate more. So, yeah, if anyone wants any, or there's like each book is the first time I did this, I felt very embarrassed, but my friend, His Holiness Rutatvija Swami, quoted Srila Prabhupada, and I'll never be bashful in business or in eating, so. but yeah, so each book is $20, and if you buy the set of three, then it's $50, and I'll sign them. But anyway, enough of that for now. Hare Krishna.
Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Adnarayan.